So welcome to another episode of Three Pillars of D&D Cast. I'm Jesse.
And I'm Tyler.
And today we're going to be talking about Strixhaven in general as a campaign setting and just how we think one of the many ways we can go about using Strixhaven as a campaign setting to do different kinds of things. So that's what this one's all about.
Yep. Strixhaven is very obviously, you know, it's a magic school, and of course it invokes things of the popular franchise Harry Potter.
Yeah, of course.
Even, like, the logo of it is very Harry Potter.
Yeah,
With the shield and the thing on top, and the name on the bottom, kind of curled sides, and the frills, and the segmented shields, I mean... Yeah,
the thing on top is Strix, by the way, which is just a type of owl. Yeah, they're really not trying that hard to get away from Harry Potter because, like, one of the things that Mark Rosewater, the one of the main designers of Magic the Gathering, one of the things he talks about is resonance, and this has resonance with the audience, right? Like, the people who are going to want to, are going to like Strixhaven are the same ones who are going to like Harry Potter and Hogwarts. It's just... the truth of it.
Yeah.
So this is meant to be for people who want that Harry Potter kind of game in D&D, but, you know.
Not Harry Potter.
But not Harry Potter. Whether
in
they just.
In a non-turf way.
Yeah. Mostly, yeah. If they want to avoid the whole turfiness of Rowling, or maybe they just don't want to be in Harry Potter because that, like, creates an expectation if you're trying to run a game to be like that. Whereas the advantage of a new world like this is you can kind of make your own rules and change things up. And so people aren't necessarily couched with how it's supposed to be.
Yeah,
so
this gives you a lot of freedom to do what you want.
Exactly.
You know? Even, like, the exact specifics of the schools and the whole system is left kind of vague. You know, you can do a lot with this, you know.
Exactly. You know, since it's D&D, you can really add a lot of your own elements, throw your own homebrew in, really, really do your own thing. I mean, remember, campaign settings aren't set in stone. You can do what you want. So that's a nice thing. But I think when they made Strixhaven, I think there was a part of when they were making the set for Magic the Gathering, they went, this would probably work for Dungeons and Dragons too. Maybe we should do this. Kind of amazing that the set came out in April and the book's coming out in what, November? They obviously knew before the set came out that they wanted to do this as a D&D campaign setting. It wasn't like the success of the set spurred them to make a D&D campaign. It was like, yeah, we're going to do this, you know?
Yeah, like the previous two books was Ravnica, which is one of the most visited planes in Magic the Gathering, is fairly beloved, and Theros, another fairly beloved plane, which would be very easy to put in D&D because of its Greek inspiration.
Yeah, I mean, it feels like Greek-inspired things are just easy to put in D&D. It's just how it is, you know?
And you can put in everything.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Tons of fiction is spurred by Greek mythology.
Yeah, Greek mythology is wonderful because the Greek gods are so humanist, like so human. Yeah.
Modern interpretations of Greek mythology is so wonderful.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, if you really look at the mythology, some of it's pretty ooh. But yeah, if you re-envision it, it's nice. So like here for our podcast audience, we have the letter of acceptance, and it is literally a letter shaped like an owl, you know, like it folds out and it has your little letter of acceptance in there. Once again, you're going to get that Harry Potter feel of you're getting your owl, right? Like, that's the thing that people say, like, that they're mad that they didn't get their owl or whatever, you know, like.
That's just going to be, like, the sub, like, name of this episode. You're going to get this Harry Potter feel.
Yeah. Welcome to Strixhaven. It's not Harry Potter.
But it kind of is.
But it kind of is. So, I mean, I like that we have all this concept art basically in the set that we can use to kind of see where they're going to probably go with this campaign setting. And I'm all for it. I like the idea of a magical school. I like, you know, the idea of putting yourself in a house or a college or, you know, whatever you want to call it. But that, you know, they call it colleges here. But, like, sorting yourself is great. And for those of the audience who, you know, play Magic the Gathering, the fact that these are an enemy color set means that there's always this internal conflict within each of the schools that plays really well for stories. It makes great stories because there's going to be rivalries within each of the schools themselves, each of the colleges, plus each of the colleges are going to have rivalries with each other, but at the same time, they're all part of the same college, so they all should all get along, just like each of the members of each individual college should get along when the time is needed, right?
Yeah, every college is like two sides of the same coin.
It's going to make for good stories, and I think it's fun. And then you have the overlaps of each of the colleges as well, you know, because of the shared colors and philosophies, and philosophies are going to be the big part about the colors. So just think of them as philosophies. Silverquill, for example, is going to have overlap with Lorehold and Witherbloom because parts of their philosophies are going to overlap, but they're also not going to necessarily get along.
Witherbloom takes different parts of the Black philosophy than what Silverquill does.
Exactly. Know? But there might be people in Silverquill who get along with certain people in Witherbloom really well, but not other people in Witherbloom, you know? So that's...
I don't know. Doesn't everyone love a good hippie?
Well, yeah. But some people love them when, you know, they're giving them some funky brew and a fun potion to play with, and some of them like them when those hippies are on fire. So everyone loves hippies a different way. Another aspect about this is we have a bunch of different ways you can kind of start a campaign, right? One of the aspects of Strixhaven is that for the first year, students don't choose their specialty. They kind of use it as a probationary period to learn the basics of magic and to figure out where they want to like specialize in. I think they can get recommendations from professors, and there's a sort of a sorting process to a certain degree. I think they had to be accepted, and it's a good place to start. You could even have, like, maybe even just be like a zero level for the characters, or maybe just a first level that lasts for a little bit. Maybe you don't have to rush the levels.
This is like the big split in like how you're going to start a campaign. Yeah, you could have your players be first years, and that, you know, you probably start them like level one or zero, because, you know, level one would imply that like warlocks and sorcerers have chosen a subclass. You start them at one or zero, and then have them pick their school, or you can start them at level three with their school already picked. That's the big difference between starts of Strixhaven.
And I think you could even do a little bit of have them pick where they want to go, like assuming they're level three at some point, but maybe you could run a short zero level or a first level campaign, but don't give them any of the abilities if they're a warlock or a sorcerer, for example. Do like a real quick, like one or two session flashback episode, like kind of like they're meeting, like a flashback meeting, and maybe they could run some elements and, you know, like feel out how their characters would have interacted with each other at the beginning, but they ultimately know where they're going with their characters. And so you just do that for like one or two sessions, and then you jump up to level three and start into something new. And then you can have little flashback moments here and there as a DM to kind of fill in little story blanks you need, or, you know, introduce characters that they should have known, but you didn't, you kind of glossed over or whatever, you know. You can do some things like that. There's a lot you can do with that early level stuff. I mean, there's a lot of really great, you know, I think there's lots of really great locations that they have built into this set. They have, you know, like, especially at the school itself, we have like the Archway Commons, and it's like this really beautiful picture of garden hedge mazes and these cool archways that they have all over. It's all over Arcavios. The whole idea is it's supposed to really have that cool college feel from the college movies feel to it overall when you're looking at this setting.
That'd be a fun campaign, writing Strixhaven like typical, like, you know, college comedy movie.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, so
like,
magical
students getting like drunk.
Yeah, getting drunk and having hazing rituals and you know, Dean, you know. you could definitely do some comedy in a college setting for sure. That's something too, is it's supposed to be young people. They set it
dumb
up
to people.
Yeah. But they said, of course, young people are all dumb. There's like, so there's a certain, you can do a lot of that as well. That whole coming of age, discovering themselves kind of storylines as well. Overall, I just don't feel Strixhaven is the best campaign setting for people who want a ton of combat.
Like, there is, they do teach combat magic, of course, you know?
Yeah, I mean, it's one of the big things. And mage duels happen on a regular basis. Like, that's supposed to be like one of the elements. So you will be dueling with other students here and there, like from other colleges or even within your own college, but mostly with other colleges, right?
Yeah. You do a lot of duels, count to 10.
Yeah. And, but the whole idea is they're not deadly. They're not supposed to be deadly, you know, like that's against the rules.
Yeah.
But as long as you're just knocking them out, you know, or at least go over there and cast a freaking heal spell on them so they don't die, you're probably fine, right? So I like that aspect. I like that they, one of the things that they've also built in is they have a lot of these various constructs and other, yeah, mechanical creatures basically that are walk around that can help the students and help them get from place to place. And they help in the biblioplex too. When we talk about the biblioplex, we'll talk about that. There's a lot of them that work there. There's a lot of things to sort. It makes for fun little moments. You can have goofy little constructs that do silly little things. They can add a little bit of like comedy or maybe some tension too. If you can maybe have them lead them down the wrong path that they shouldn't have gone or something like that too. Some of the cards illustrate like introduction to environmental science, for example, and it's just wonderful picture. You kind of see it has all the different five colors of magic on there. There's going to be a lot of these introductory classes, and there's going to be overlaps. You know, we're not going to have students who just do, you know, strictly stick to one or two things. They might learn to do all kinds of different kinds of spells. The whole idea is to really mature them as mages overall. Some of this artwork for these introductory lesson things are really fun. Like, yeah, this one girl who like blowing up her table or something. I'm not sure what she's doing, but it's Introduction to Annihilation is the name of the class. And that's just wonderful, right? Like, in a world where magic exists, you're going to end up having these different kinds of classes, right? That are going to be more than just, you know, math and science and writing. Yeah, those are important too. But here we can also have just straight classes that talk about how to blow things up properly and how to control that power and things like that. You could have some really good moment, interesting moments with your characters. Remember that, like this particular picture we're looking at now is a scene of a celebration at the end of the semester is what this card is about. But, like, this campaign setting really lends itself to moments of joy and levity. You remember, you're young people in a college setting, you're going to work together. There might be rivalries, but you're also still friends.
Yeah, and Strixhaven it's not like going to be a nitty gritty, your favorite NPC dies, or that one player makes a heroic sacrifice. No, it's just a time of learning, fun, and joy. It's not like sabotaging your rival with like a spell that, you know, reduces their intelligence thing, you know. It's just about having fun and, you know, casting spells in a college setting.
Exactly. I mean, yeah, you could have somebody die, but like it should happen like once. You know, like,
even then I would encourage it.
Yeah, I would save it for you had to really earn that moment, right? It needs to be somebody that's been with, you know, in it for a while. It's, you're not going to be killing people willy-nilly, right?
Also, I think it should be like maybe a death that happened because of a role and not like a story death. I think that'd also be good, you know, like an accident.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, you could do that too. I mean, there's a lot of different things. And, you know, just to tie in other products, I think you could probably pull in some of those mysteries from Candlekeep, and you might be able to reflavor some of them to fit in with Strixhaven as well, as part of an overarching campaign. Because I really do think mysteries and intrigue and politics could have a good place in Strixhaven as well.
Also, Candlekeep Mystery is all about books. Well, didn't you say Strixhaven has like the biggest library in the multiverse?
Yeah,
The
yes, it does.
Bibliotheque.
It
Yeah,
certainly
of course
does.
there'd be some magical or important books in Strixhaven that would cause a mystery. That makes sense.
Exactly. Such as, we're looking at this wonderful picture here of a book being gripped by a tiny gargoyle construct. I think this one is actually sorting the books, but you can see in the background that there's all these different levels of this library. It's huge, right? It's just giant, giant library, and it's probably gonna rival Candlekeep in size, you know, just a library at Strixhaven, I
Not
suppose.
rival, I'm sure it's a lot bigger
Yeah,
than Candlekeep.
it should be. It's supposed to contain every spell in the multiverse. The whole idea is to keep all of them to kind of have like this, you know, Library of Alexandria feel to it, right? That can lend itself to some really dangerous or mysterious things happening. The books in the Biblioplex, you don't really find them, they find you. That's something as a DM you can really run with. You can have these books just kind of show up when the characters are doing research. Or one of the servants, you know, mechanical constructs just like drop something by for them because they thought they might need it or whatever. You know, there's a lot of different things you can do with that, and it's just kind of built into the world. Sometimes I know I struggle to come up with a reason why players should do things. And having like a kind of a built-in system is nice, you know, it's supposed to happen.
Yeah, saying like this, there's always incentive to do things. You have classes, you
Exactly.
know?
There's always research topics that you have to do this by, you know, Monday, so you have to figure out how to do it, right? And so that might mean pouring through scrolls or books in the library. You know, that might mean doing some field research. You know, that might mean leaving school grounds to go do something, right? It's a world that's relatively at peace. There are conflicts and problems, of course. There's a whole group called the Auric that's a whole other can of worms. Of rivalry and issues to deal with. You know, there's a lot to explore and a lot of incentive to do that exploring, you know, for your classes. I mean, that alone is enough motivation to get players out to do stuff.
Do you think milestone or experience is what you would do for a campaign like this?
Ooh, I mean, that's a
What I think I would do, that I would do experience and more difficult classes. So like advanced classes would give more experience. So to show that you're learning more is
Yeah.
what I would do.
Yeah, you could do that in a way people could decide what classes they want to take to try to build their character up the fastest or to push them to do things they wouldn't normally do, you know?
Yeah, or maybe certain classes could give you a feat when you finish it
Yeah.
instead of the normal feat system. Yeah, Campaign of Strixhaven should really show the fact that you're taking these classes and that you're learning. You know, you're learning stuff and skills and abilities from these classes.
No, I agree. If you're doing a very focus on the classes campaign, I think you're right. I think the experience system would work good. If you're trying to kind of run an arc every year, you have some kind of conflict that's supposed to take the entire year, you know, structured more like a Harry Potter book kind of style, I think milestone would be better. I think there's going to be a lot of you do this thing that happens, and there's a really intense like 2 week or you know 5 days or 2 weeks or whatever, and then like you skip 3 months, you know.
See, I actually don't like that because how school and education and works, you know, it goes day by day. You know, you can't, it's not like school you can pay attention for 5 days and that sums up the school year. I think a campaign where the whole point is that you're in a school, it should be about the classes. But that's just me.
Well, yeah. No, Now, I get what you're saying. What I think I'm trying to say is that there's going to be certain campaigns where the classes are going to take the back seat to the stuff that's happening outside of class.
Yeah.
And there's going to be certain campaigns that are going to be about the class, right? So I think it depends on what kind of campaign you're running. It's going to make a big difference.
Also, it could be difficult how to balance, like, you know, because if you have a large amount of people, you're probably going to have a large spread of difference. You know, colleges, you know.
And I think if you had a lot of players, the minutia of the day-to-day classes might be too much. You
it
know?
Might.
And they're not always going to be in the same classes together if they're all from different colleges, right?
Yeah, it could be difficult.
The way, like, our campaigns tend to be, you know, one DM and two players, I think the minutia of day-to-day, because they're probably going to be either in the same college or, you know, you're going to mostly focus on the classes that they have together. And I think that would work very well for that.
Especially
kind of
us, like, I'd probably take Quandrix, you'd probably take, like, Prismari.
Yeah, I mean, say Emma runs it, I'm going to take Witherbloom, you're going to take Quandrix, right? We're going to have a little bit of overlap, you know, on the green side. But at the same time, like you said, if I was running it, you'd be maybe running Quandrix, maybe you'd try Lorehold, and she'd be in Prismari, then you'd overlap in the red stuff, right? I mean, there's that element to it as well. So you kind of see how it all works out, but also the stuff that happens outside of class is going to be important as well.
There's outside classes, but there's also probably going to be, like, you know, more universal classes, you know? It's not like every class is, like, for one color or for one college. Is, you know, there's probably going to be, like, basic arcane, basic information gathering, basic etc.
Exactly. Just to kind of get an idea of the scale of the Biblioplex, it is just monstrous. It's probably, like, 10 stories just in the base level, and then it has, like, a dome section. It's probably another 10 or 15 stories on its own, at least.
That thing's huge.
Yeah, and then on top of that, in the basement area, they have what they call the Hall of Champions, I think it is, or the Hall of Heroes, something like that. And I mean, it's just full of giant statues of legendary mages and stuff. And that's like a giant amphitheater section. It's just huge. I mean, they just has huge things inside of a huge building. It's just amazing.
Yeah, like, it's the size of... It's hard to think of a good comparison. Yeah, it's hard to get a scale.
Yeah, I mean, I look at it and it kind of... Yeah, it's hard to give a scale.
You can see, like, these houses just, like, next to it. And it's this, like, giant towering Biblioplex.
Exactly. You know? It's just... It's amazing. It's huge. And it's wide open, too. Like, you'll notice that it has a bunch, it's like really open air. That just lends itself to lots of different approaches on things. And yeah, it just has this enormous scale. It's like a city-sized building. It's amazing.
I'd probably say, like, just one of those little, like, towers on the side that's holding it up. You know, the ones that's capped with blue. You know, those? Probably say it's the size of, like, some of those, like, really tall buildings in, like, New York.
Yeah.
You know, something that was, like, some of the tallest buildings in the world. And it's, like, less than half of the total height.
I mean, it's ridiculously big, and it just makes me happy because I like books. Before we move on to the next section, let's go ahead and take a short break.
Welcome to Realms of Peril and Glory, an all-new actual play podcast.
There are guided tours once a week. Come on, Darbrennan.
How about you, you filthy timepiece?
RPG is home to hilarious stories.
The thing that kicks off a really good tale is...
When they take their tops off.
Sorry?
When you're reading, like... Don't worry.
And thrilling adventures.
There's bad guys, there's an ogre. Probably best if you stay here. Sorry, I'll be back soon.
Why am I tied up?
That was your sibling, not me. Bye.
Each season is an all-new actual play story told collaboratively at the table. Featuring guest players from the Magnus Archives.
I remember being in the water, and that was awful. And now I'm not in the water, and that's... much better.
Wooden overcoats.
I am a snowman. I have one job, and that is to stand in place. I was doing that very well.
Yes, and she might come back 9 times more powerful with lots of food and kippers.
We fix space junk.
On the surface,
You might look different, but you're very, very similar inside. And I can vouch for that.
And more.
What I am about to tell you stays in this room. Got it?
Don't happen know where there's like secret plans about meat and smoothies.
Ducks? Did you say ducks? Did you say ducks? Did you say duck?
You can find Realms of Peril and Glory wherever you listen to podcasts.
We're going to have a good laugh. Then we're going to possibly cry. And then we'll grab dinner.
Welcome to the sellout break, where we try to sell you our stuff, but we have nothing to sell, so it doesn't really work. But
we should get merch.
We should get merch. I don't know how or why and who would buy it, but we should get some.
We sell for like ridiculously high, just like,
yeah, you know, $300 for a bottle of water. either way, if you want to get a hold of us, we're on Twitter at Our Dorky. If you want to email us with question, thoughts, things you'd like to see on the show, any of that kind of stuff, it's ourdorkyfamily@gmail.com. If you're listening to this on a podcast, we have it in a YouTube. If you're on the YouTube, we have this in a podcast. Podcasts are all the major ones. You can pretty much find us on all of those. So there you go. So other than the merchandise, what else can we sell these people?
Go buy Strixhaven when it comes out.
Yeah, we don't get any money for that. Yeah, we don't get any money for that, but you should do it anyways.
All the Magic Gathering books have been good, and I feel like, but this one, I think everyone should buy. I mean, I think everyone should buy the other ones, but, like, it's Magical School. You know, I feel like the Magic Gathering label will just, like, hold it down.
Yeah, badly. And don't let it. They do serious world building on these. And at this point, I think we're drifting into the episode again. So welcome back from the break. They do serious world building when they make these worlds and sets. They have a whole team that's dedicated to it. So it's not just like they're just going to slap a world together based on a bunch of cards that some Yahoo made. They have world building guides. If you find the art books that they sell for the different planes, like, you can see all the stuff that they come up with that never even makes it into the set, so that they understand the world fully. Just like you would do if you were building a campaign, you know, your own homebrew campaign world. You'd want to know more about all the little details. You may never tell your players the little stuff about how the bread is made in a certain village, but you know, and that's important, and that helps you decide how, you know, Gertrude talks about her breads.
Like, there's something, like, great, like, you know, details, and, like all the colleges have their own ways of casting spells. You know, like, Lorehold, they use scrolls. You know, Silverquill's all about words. Witherbloom's all about components. I think Prismari's all about the, physical movements of your body. Is that it?
Yeah, it's probably more like the somatic components and more than anything.
Quandrix is math.
Math. The formulas. Just the whole
formula.
Yeah, the whole like ritual. I mean, they are kind of the same thing if you think about it, of how the spells are put together. They're all about mastering the details of that and how you can manipulate the little bits and pieces of those to affect the spell. That's why it makes sense that sorcerers are one of the classes that can be in Quandrix, for example.
The two classes for Quandrix fit so perfectly. You know, sorcerers about, you know, getting into the minutiae, the bit of math, and, you know, knowing how to empower a spell. But while wizard is about just knowing a lot of spells, using that intelligence of yours.
Exactly. And that reminds me, Strixhaven helps bridge that gap that D&D kind of never had with Harry Potter. In that, by doing this cross-class system they came up with, at first I thought it was, I mean, I'll be honest, at first I thought it was kind of a lazy way of doing things, but now I'm starting to get it. Sorcerers and warlocks are learning spells kind of like wizards do, right? And that's kind of how in Harry Potter and other magic-based worlds too, people have a natural magical talent, like sorcerers, but then they can also learn magic too, so they can get better at it. But they're always going to rely on their natural abilities a little more. And then you have your wizards, who are going to be more like your, like, Hermione and stuff like that, who she didn't have any natural talent, but she studied her ass off, and now she's an amazing wizard, right?
You know, to make a good reference, kind of like, you know, kind of like Naruto. You know, they kind of teach similar things to everybody, but everyone also has their own, you know, natural abilities.
You combine that with their race as well, you have kind of how it all comes together, right? Even though there's only 5 subclasses they're going to focus on in these books, you can really iterate it in many different ways, and they can have their own unique qualities to them. And I think that's, like, sometimes restriction breeds creativity, and I think you can get a lot of creativity out of this. Out of the restrictions they kind of give you in a way, right? So another way that Strixhaven will remind you of Harry Potter is Mage Tower. Mage Tower is they're kind of like Quidditch, not as complicated, but that's probably a good thing. We're playing Dungeons and Dragons. If we're going to have a sport where everyone's running around doing things, we probably don't want to have too complicated.
Yeah.
Just so I make sure I get this right, the basic rules of Mage Tower are this. 2 opposing teams meet in the stadium. Each team is composed of 5 mages plus 1 small mascot creature. You know, each of them have their own mascots. Prismaris have their elementals. You know, Quandrix has
their fractals.
Silverquill has their Inklings. Witherbloom has their pests, which are just adorable and gross at the same time. I love them.
They're great.
And then
Lorehold has spirits.
Yeah, it has their spirit statue things. So then, yeah, you have your mascot. And each team has a tall tower at the end of their stadium with their mascot creature at the top. The goal is to score a point by stealing the opposing team mascot and transporting it back to your own tower. So basically, it's like capture the flag. All magic that would harm a player, mascot, spectator, or that would damage the stadium, or the basic rules of the game in any way is nullified. Otherwise, all magic is legal, subject to the review of the Mage Tower Referee Council. The game lasts for 3 phases, which are approximately 20 minutes apiece, and after the 3rd phase, if you have the most points, you win, obviously. This encourages, if you're going to have a Mage Tower as part of your campaign, you could have players who actually spend their spell slots, or, you know, the spells known and stuff like that, just so they can give advantage in Mage Tower, if certain of the players are on the Mage Tower team. So they're not just going to be choosing spells for combat purposes. There's going to be that extra role-playing purpose outside of combat to take certain spells as well, on top of all the other stuff that should be non-combat that they're taking spells for, I think, as well. So obviously Mage Tower is not going to be for everybody. You know, it's just a way for, if you feel like you need to have that sports moment in your college, you can do that. You can't just have it as a backdrop of something that the players just go and watch, right? Root for their favorite teams. And
although I do think it would be fun to play, you know, there's several great spells, and like I'm already thinking of strategies, and I don't really even care about, you know, sports in real life. I'm thinking of, like, all types of strategies for this.
Exactly. And you can have a really fun show don't tell moment with your players here as well, like, especially if you have them come in as first year students, right? And you can have, like, this cool thing where you have this whole scripted game that goes on, and you tell them all the cool stuff that all the players are doing with each other to make them kind of want to play Mage Tower, right? You can have a really cool scene that you describe that is kind of built into your campaign. And you can have other things happen during the event. I mean, obviously, this is the main form of entertainment other than watching random mage duels happen that's going to be here. You know, I mean, there's plenty of other things to do, too, I'm sure. Like one of the stories talks about a major eatery where a troll is like has the best cafe on the college campus. There's lots of fun little things that they've kind of built into this world that when this campaign setting comes out, they've already filled it with really wonderful ideas already.
Yeah. Oh, my God. That's myself. Which is a fun idea. Also, what I would do is I would have, like, cafes just, like, everywhere.
Oh, yeah.
Just, like, every single corner. It's, like, the Starbucks equivalent.
That would be fun. So speaking of trolls, there's just all kinds of different people in this, like, different kinds of people in this world. One of the major races is called the Archaics. They're like this race of giant multi-armed. This one has like 8 arms. It's kind of hard to grok all of them. In this picture, it's kind of the point. Kind of like your 100-handed ones in Greek mythology. But they're like these giant stone creatures that have this vast knowledge that you can learn from. But they speak in like weird riddles and stuff like that. So you can get good knowledge from them, but you have to kind of decipher what they're talking about. Obviously, this is not going to be a player character race. This is definitely going to be an NPC style race that you come across. It's one of the many people of the world. Then, of course, the Owlfolk here, that was in the UA for the Feywild. I'm sure they're going to introduce it. I'm sure they'll introduce it in the Feywild book, but hopefully they'll reprint it in Strixhaven. If not, we're going to go across a lot of races that they might put in it. So maybe they just figured they put that in the Feywild and leave some room for a dozen other races. I seriously think they could put a dozen races, I think, in Strixhaven.
You could use the new Alpha UA, you could use the Erkakra, you could go to the plane shift documents and use the Aven. That'd also be a pretty good one.
Yeah.
There's a lot of great official races to fill this one.
And then we have they have the Bear Folk. There's not really a good equivalent, but maybe the Shifters.
Maybe Firbolg.
I'd maybe use a custom lineage and do something fun with it. But I mean, a big, friendly, cute bear. I love this picture.
I
think people would like to have bear folk in there and not just, you know, never mind. I won't make that joke.
I know what you're going to make.
I am the worst.
You should have just said that. Now it won't fit anymore.
No, we're going to leave all that in. Then you have the Burrog, which is just a funny way of saying frog folk. And
yeah.
I like this particular picture because it looks really cool. I never imagined a frog in a cloak like this. I mean, it also kind of evokes Glenn / Frog from Chrono Trigger, too. I mean, you're obviously going to have those types. I look forward to... What is it? The grunge. I can never remember the name of.
These aren't really like the grunge because grunges are like poisonous frogs.
So maybe they could do a different take on the grunge. Maybe a new race, or maybe you just could homebrew yourself up something that was similar to the grunge but different.
Custom lineage.
Then they have these are their demons. The demons are multi-armed. Probably not going to be player characters. They seem to be multi-armed monstrosities as well. I'm going to guess that there's probably some kind of tie between the Archaics and the demons.
Yeah, the demons are, like, pretty huge. Like, you can see human in the corner of that image. Like,
yeah, the human is... Demon. Yeah, that humanoid is quite small. So, yeah, these demons are supposed to be big. They might just be, like, the good and the evil, or I don't know. In Magic the Gathering, demons are like devils are in Dungeons and Dragons, so they might end up being called devils, you know, in the campaign setting, because they're actually more like devils. They make deals and stuff like that for ancient knowledge and stuff like that. So,
well, some do, but some are still, you know, just evil.
They might have a little bit of both, so we'll kind of see how that one plays, but there's not a lot of info on them. Here's the Djinn. This is, we're probably going to use a water genasi. I would like them to do something a little new, maybe, because I never really cared for the genasi that much, like, mechanically. I love the flavor of them. And flavor-wise, a water genasi will match this just fine.
You get some good water spells.
Yeah, actually, an air genasi might work for this, too, technically. No, you do. I mean, it could be good. And then we have the Dryad. I'd like to see the Dryad. I'm actually kind of surprised they didn't do that in the Feywild one.
They might. They might just not release that UA.
That's true. I like to see Dryads. I think they'd be really interesting. I like the whole concept of them being something you could play as a race. I hope they make it a playable race, because I think they'd be really interesting.
Dryads are just druids, though, as a race.
No, I mean, yes, in a certain degree, but like in just how the Auntie have like a different way of viewing the world because of how their race is structured. I think Dryads would have that too. They just don't see the same way the other humanoids do, you know. And I think that could be a fun role playing aspect to play up. Of course, they have dwarves as well. I think it'd be interesting to see, especially they're supposed to be dwarf wizards, obviously, spellcasters. You're going to really see, hopefully, maybe they'll come up with a new subclass. Maybe they'll just expect you to use Tasha's rules to customize them up, make them a little different. We'll kind of see how that goes.
Being sub-race?
Oh, yeah, they say subclass. I meant sub-race.
Yeah. You're still thinking about how dwarves should get a sub-race that gives them intelligence, right?
Well, no. I'm just saying they might have a different sub-race that's Arcavios flavored, you know?
I mean, that could be an option, but you know there is a sub-race for dwarfs that gives them spells, right?
The Duergar or whatever?
Yeah, the Grey Dwarf. Dark Vision, Extra Language, Advantage of Saving Throws Against Illusions, Stronger Paralyzed, Enlarge Reduced, Invisibility Spells.
Yeah, and I think that these are supposed to be more of your, more like mountain dwarves and stuff. And I think there's nothing wrong with that. I think actually bringing a dwarf character to Shookshaven, who has like these tool proficiencies and stuff like that, then they learn some spells on top of it, would make for a pretty well-rounded character anyways. So I don't say they even need to make a sub-race that's different, that has like cantrips or anything built into it. That's not necessary. I like dwarves the way they are. The next race we have are the Efreeti. Once again, these are going to be like your fire genasi. That's probably what they'll use. They might make a new race for it, but I just don't see that happening. They might as well stick with what they got.
Yeah, I agree.
We have the Elder Dragons. Mostly those are going to be, you know, the five founders of the school.
Elder Dragon? That should be a race.
That'd be a player race. No, I mean,
it's like all the other players, like humans, elves, dwarves, and this giant dragon. What's up, guys?
What's up? Here to learn some spells. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, which is good. No, I
drunk.
But no, the Elder Dragons, of course, are the five founders of the school. The colleges are named after one of the five dragons who managed to tackle the magic or whatever and turn it into wonderfulness or something. Obviously not player races. Then we have the elves. We have plenty of versions of elves. We certainly don't need any more. I don't know which one they're going to focus on when it comes to Arcavios. They'll probably just go with wood elves. They do wood elves in every plane for some reason. Then they have goblins. There's not a whole lot of them they talk about. This one's that I have up on the screen is a really silly one. You know, goblins can be fun. They're redoing goblins in that new UA. No, they haven't done goblins in that new UA.
They did kobolds.
They should redo goblins because I think that the current goblins, I just don't think will fit in the Strixhaven that well. And I think they should do them a little bit better. You know, not bruise them so bad. Of course, there's humans.
Ugh, humans.
You know, I want to be human. You're basic. All right.
I've never played a human in Dungeons & Dragons. Yeah, never.
I haven't played it. I haven't played a human since second edition, I don't think.
You play a human, like, ever? You're the worst.
I know, right? I played a human fighter.
Are you serious?
Yeah. But I didn't dump stat my charisma. I actually had the highest charisma. All the other players dumped their charisma all the time, so we could never pass any persuasion checks or anything like that. So we always ended up having to kill everything because we were too stupid to talk our way out of a fight. So I made a fighter with high charisma.
Okay, that's fun.
Yeah.
Still a human fighter.
So then there's the core. Like, the core, if you watch our Zendikar episode, we talked about the core in Zendikar as well. I like the core. The way they had it in the Plane Shift document was wonderful. They're basically halflings, but with climbing abilities, and they're medium size instead of small. I don't think they should change them. I would just keep using the core they had from the Plane Shift document. Just bring it right over. Maybe make some tweaks, but keep the general concept. I could show you some pictures from of some of the other parts of the world. If you're going to be exploring the world as a student, a core is cool. They'd work, you know, even if they keep the concept of the core from Zendikar, where they can swing around on ropes really well and up in high places. I don't think they do that in Strixhaven, but maybe they could. They're lucky. They're less likely to die. So, do you have any thoughts on the core?
No, they're just really white. Or they're the only white creatures on the multiverse that are actually good at athletics.
Exactly. No, there's actually other ones. But speaking of which, here's another one. What's that?
I meant white people.
Only white people that are good. Yeah.
That's yeah. Right. Sorry, I should said people instead of creatures.
All right. So then we have the Leonin. They were in Theros, I believe, right?
Yeah.
The stats for the Leonin there. So
I'm really surprised they reprinted the Leonin, actually.
Everyone likes cat people. I mean, a furry's got to have something to play.
Cat people, though, they're specifically lion people.
Yeah, that's true. And I bet you if you really want to reflavor a tabaxi to fit in, you could probably bring a tabaxi in. I don't see why it wouldn't work. But
basically, if you want to play a Dex Leonin.
But, like, you know, after Tosh is everybody's Dex if you want them to be.
Oh, yeah, true.
So Leonin are just, they just have a different, because they have more of, like, the roar thing going. They have that more, they just have a different flavor to them. I'd want to use Leonin, say, in Silverquill, but I'd rather use Tabaxi, say, Witherbloom.
Or Lorehold.
Lorehold, yeah. Prismari, most of the other ones. But Silverquill, Leonin just seems like a right fit, right? Then we have the Lizard Folk. Fun fact, this card is from a card called Hall Monitor. And Monitor is a type of lizard. So they were making a weird school joke with that one. But yeah, they have Lizard Folk, of course, already in Dungeons & Dragons. You could use that. They, of course, could come up with their own Viashino variants if they want to have the Magic the Gathering version. But they'll probably just stick with Lizard Folk. We have the Loxodons. Those were in Ravnica, right?
Yeah. Yep.
I'm glad we have the Loxodons. Loxodons are fun. We have the Merfolk. They're essentially just Tritons. They also had Merfolk in various plane shift documents. Did they have them in Ravnica, or did they just tell you to use Triton?
No. They used to tell you to use Triton. Same with Theros.
Then you have the Minotaur, which was in Theros and in Ravnica, right? I think it was in both.
Yep.
Yeah, it was in both books. I do love me some Minotaurs. They're fun. Mechanically, they're actually not my favorite race to take, but I need to expand my horizons probably a little more on that. So take them just because I've never taken
them. Well, Minotaur, the biggest problem with Minotaur is they're just bad mechanically. They give you, like, nothing.
Yeah.
Minotaurs are mechanically bad because all they allow you to do is to give you horns you can attack with, and they allow you to charge. And when you charge, you can attack with your horns. Now, if, say, you could charge and then attack with something else, it might make with fun builds. But no, it doesn't work like that.
Yeah, and I get what they're going for flavor-wise. I remember listening to a dungeon cast where they're talking about the Minotaur. And if what if like you gave the Minotaur Never Get Lost, for example? Excellent sense of direction because of the whole labyrinth tie-in, right?
Yeah.
I mean, you can flavor Minotaurs in different ways, and they just have stuck with this whole you're a guy with horns on your head thing.
Maybe give them like a anger mechanic. Like maybe when they're low on hit points, they do more damage.
Yeah. They could flavor, they could do some different flavors of Minotaur, I think. And I just, especially if you're going to have a medium-sized Minotaur, because they make them all medium, right? You should make the smaller Minotaur a little different than your traditional big beat-em-up Minotaurs, you know?
Yeah. Because, like, yes, if they were size large, honestly, I could excuse the fact that they were just beam up, because you have a large size creature. How many fun builds that could be, you know?
Exactly.
Just giant monstrosity. You could take, like, the spell enlarge reduce, so you make your opponents tiny, or make your opponents small, but you're large, and you just, like, crush them.
Yeah. Like you do.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I hope they do something different with the Minotaur, because I just don't think the way they've done Minotaur lends itself to Strixhaven as well as it should be, and I think there's other ways you can flavor it, and I just hope they do something new. Then they have ogres. Ogres are hard. I don't know.
They just feel like orcs, but not.
Yeah, they're like, yeah, I don't know.
Let me look at the ogre stat box real quickly. So I haven't really looked at ogres
before. You know, I haven't either. Let's take a real quick second and look at that before we talk any more on it.
Let's see. They get angry quickly. They're stupid. They probably won't keep the stupid part. They just go too far. Legendary stupidity. Few ogres can count to 10, even with their fingers in front of them. I mean, come on!
So they'll probably have to do ogres a little different if they want to have ogres as a playable race, obviously. It's supposed to be a large giant, so maybe they'll intend them to be NPCs and just kind of dumb NPCs, and I don't know. This seems kind of weird, so...
Maybe if you meet them like a dumb sweetheart, that could be fun. I'd be okay with that, but they're both evil and stupid.
They have this whole greedy collectors thing, so maybe they'll just make them really big on collecting things, like obsessive level collectors, and with...
Even like hoarders?
Yeah, like hoarders or something. Maybe they'll just go a little too far with their anger and their overeating and stuff like that. Maybe drop the legendary stupidity. It doesn't really make sense in a college to have legendary stupidity, so they might have to drop that aspect of them.
I do hope they reinvent the ogre. I do not like how it is currently. It just feels... They're currently trying to remove this kind of stuff from Dungeons & Dragons. That's why they got rid of, like orcs used to have a -2 to intelligence. They don't anymore.
Yeah, so maybe they'll revision the ogres as if they want to make them a playable race. Maybe they just won't make them a playable race. Maybe they'll just kind of gloss over that part, you know? I don't know. So we'll see where they go with that.
I hope they make him a playable race. It'd be fun to play an ogre.
Yeah, I mean, if they can figure out, because it has to be medium, they're not going to make it large. So if they're going to make it a medium creature, then they need to find some way to make it unique and different from ogres. Because otherwise it just feels like ogres or trolls too much. And I just don't. Or orcs and trolls too much. So speaking of which, we have the next one is orcs. Like, they have one of the stories you can listen to or read. It focuses on an orc in Prismari. She's fairly interesting and fun, and I kind of like they kind of go with her. I think she's supposed to be a druid. So I think they could do a little more with orc and make them, they could go a little further with the whole making orcs not as evil and dumb in Strixhaven. So maybe they'll have a revisioned orc there. Then we have the rocks, you know.
They're rhino people. Really hope this gets added along with bear folk. I'm not a furry, but they need to add more animalistic races.
Yeah, no, I would like to see some more animalistic races. Just add a little flavor. I don't know what you would do for a rhino. I don't know enough about rhinos. I feel like I should research rhinos a little more to figure out what they could add mechanically with rhinos, but...
Well, of course, they have their, you know, they can charge and they have their big horn up front.
Yeah, but then there's, like, minotaurs, and do we need another minotaur that we don't like? I mean...
No.
Maybe there's something about rhinos that I don't know that's really cool or interesting, so... I think if you did some research the actual rhinos and see what they had going for them, maybe we could come up with some cool mechanic for them. Next is tree folk. They're going to be like the good version of the treants that already exist in D&D. Much like the dryads, they're going to have that different perspective on the world. They're going to grow up in forests mostly. And I mean, obviously they're going to have bark skin on at all times. things like that. You're probably going to end up being like an alternate furbolg or something like that. You can have some fun with that. Then you have trolls. Trolls are like orcs, but bigger.
I think for trolls, what they should do is they should kind of make them kind of like dwarves that are sometimes depicted. You know, they like make stuff and they can harness magic and like...
This picture here has them with, you know, some kind of like investigative goggle on to check the anatomy of what he's doing. Like I mentioned, there was a troll in one of the stories that has like the best restaurant in Strixhaven. You know, they could be another kind of crafter, but like different
than
the dwarves.
They should be crafters.
Yeah.
And that's what I feel they should be. I feel very strongly about this, and I don't know why.
And I like that they just have these big, giant, you know, like, tusks that kind of go out. I mean, I know trolls in D&D are traditionally have that resistance, have that weakness to fire and acid and stuff like that. And maybe they could keep that with them, but have the regenerative ability. I mean, a player character with regenerative ability would be interesting. The trolls in D&D have, you know, keen smell and regeneration, but they also have their, you know, you have to have the shut it off with fire and acid, right? That's...
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what it is. That's an interesting mechanic. I mean, that alone makes them powerful. It works in a world full of wizards because you're not going to have barbarians or fighters even. I mean, you're looking at a D8 hit points tops or D6 to a D8. So they're not going to be big damage sponge. You probably wouldn't want to make the player characters regenerate less than 10 hit points at the start of each of its turns. Maybe just 1 or 5 or something like that. It would be interesting to see that as a player character race. We have the turtle folk. We already have the turtle already exists. I imagine
that
would probably just use that and go from there. This particular picture I pulled up is pretty cool. Obviously, some kind of it must be a Quandrix sorcerer, and it's just cool. And then they have the vampires. We have the Dampier from
Van Richten's got to Ravenloft.
Yeah, they should go with the Dampier. You know, it should be something that can be out during the day. Still have that hunger. They should just use that. That's fine. You know, a lot of the Magic the Gathering vampires, even from their the Blade and Shift documents, are basically like Dampiers more anyways. So they could either use the Blade and Shifted vampires or use the Dampier, one or the other. You might end up with both. I could see both being there. You know, maybe they'll reprint that from the Blade and Shift. Yeah, so like that goes to show you there's just a lot of races that they could really bring into yeah. it, like they did with Ravnica and Theros. So
also, most importantly, people from all over the multiverse go to Strixhaven. So you can play any race you want to.
Yeah, that's true too. I mean, they
basically, I'd say the only race you should play is Yanti, because that'd be way overpowered.
Yeah, no, it would be. But I mean,
magic resistance, the magic school.
Exactly. So, like, you know, planeswalkers can obviously come to Strixhaven and have kids, and they could be of any race. You don't necessarily want to have your characters be planeswalkers unless that's what you're doing for your campaign. And that opens up a whole new can of worms, and, well, that could be fun. Don't get me wrong. That's something different, you know?
Yeah, I like eating worms.
Tyler, worm lover.
No, I like squirrels more, but I don't like to eat squirrels.
True enough. But yeah, and they have a special name for squirrels called Scurrids here for some reason. I don't know why they had to be different.
Squirrels are amazing. They should have squirrel folk. This isn't related to Strixhaven. They should have squirrel folk.
They should. All right, so I think that's going to wrap it up for today as our discussion of Strixhaven. Yeah. We will be talking more about Strixhaven, so stay tuned. Yep. See you next time.
Or we don't, and we'll murder you. I don't know.
Yeah, so have a good day. Bye-bye. Here's where we talk about garbage. You're cut up, buddy. Are you all right?
I'm fine. Yeah.
Okay. I thought you were dead.
I'm not dead. I'm alive, baby.
All right. Is that a little better? I mean, my face is a little glowy, but
it's better than dull dad.
Yeah. I was looking like, I'm the ghost version of a fat man.
And the ghost of diet past. Also, fix your camera. You're going gray all the time.
Yeah.
Not use your hair.
Hey. So speaking of gray, or actually more of white, there's the core.
Lots of white in this room.
That's true.
Lots of white.
Okay.
Speaking around the log.
What's... Sneaking around the log.